This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 357, Real Reality, or something. Hello, everybody, and welcome again to GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly technology podcast. My name's Andy Piper, and I'm coming to you from here in the west side of London. And with me today are two of my very best friends, and I'm going to pass you across to one of them to start off with, Mr. Michael Martin. How are you doing?
Fantastic, Andy. I'm doing fantastic, actually. Thank you. Good. I'll come to you from Chapel Hill. Lovely day today, and I'm glad to be joined by you and another one of our favorite friends, Mr. Michael Rowe. Hi, Michael.
Hey. Glad to see you both today on a wonderful Games at Work recording time period.
Yeah. So we've got all kinds of good fun stuff for the show today, don't we? We've got reality, quasi-reality, some real reality, maybe even some mixed reality. Who knows? We could get real on this show, potentially. So let's start off with Apple's Reality OS. There were a couple news articles about this, not just saying, hey, looks like it leaked again, and someone was quick enough to grab the GitHub linkage and see it showing up in the code, but there's now further pontification about what Reality OS may actually be and what it represents. What do you guys think about that?
Well, as you guys know, I look forward to WWDC each year. if Reality OS is really going to be a reality, I would expect something about it to come out this year at WWDC, just with all the other rumors. And we talked about this a while back on kind of all the signals that are sent before Apple does something. Mm-hmm. I think we're hitting peak signal and critical mass and maximum hype, or whatever you want to call it, if this is real, WWDC will at least give the developers a preview, kind of like... what was it called? Something with a C. The preview 3 years ago, or maybe 4 years ago, a WWDC. It was 4 years ago, WWDC, that allowed you to write an app on iOS and have it run on the Mac.
So that's called Catalyst right now.
Catalyst. No, Catalyst was the newer name, wasn't it? Wasn't there a name before that?
Was there?
With a C?
I'm forgetting now. You might be right.
Yeah, I'm forgetting too, but I'll have to look it up. But that's this to me feels like then, right? When they started, because they had a couple of years prior to this one with lots of AR demos and lots of importance around AR and lots of different things around it. So now it's kind of like all the steps are there, or all the components are there. And this Reality OS, if def... in a header, maybe taking us to that point where it becomes something real. And if so, I think it'll be at WWDC this year.
I mean, I think the code...
And I'm excited.
The code is unlikely to lie. I mean, why would they have those lines of code there? And it appears to be, you know, it's a legitimate Apple repo as far as I can see on GitHub. But we don't necessarily know what... this means at the moment. We don't know whether it's like a full operating system, whether it's some kind of, it looks like it's a simulator at the moment anyway. So like you said, Michael, it might just be a precursor to something else. What would it need to do in terms of being its own OS? Would that just be the visual elements? Would it be something, you know, much more in depth all the way down to the metal? Much as iOS has sort of birthed tvOS and all the other bits that came from that kernel. So, and of course, that came from the OS X kernel back in the day. So,
right.
It's interesting to see. One of the things that's interesting here, especially in the Fast Company article, is towards the end, in fact, towards the middle, there's a reference to the Niantic Pokemon Go AR Plus stuff. And mm-hmm. one of the things I noted, I went for a walk earlier today, and I noted that the Pokemon Go game is encouraging me to do 3D scans of Pokestops much more aggressively or much more prominently. You spend a lot more time around at the Pokestop and actually doing making a moving video all around it. So presumably if they can get 20, 100 people do 3D scans with different devices in the same area, then they're going to get a really nice high resolution set of images, you know, that match up
of that Pokestop.
You could really create a nice mesh from that,
right? Exactly. So it's I found that interesting, and I think I've been reading about how, you know, the Niantic CEO is thinking. I forget his name. I really should know this because I think they are a big player in this space. You know, starting to collect real world information of that nature that can be used in an AR type context.
This is really interesting. So I'm looking more detail in the Git repo. There are many different the thing that's called out is a specific if compiler directive, yes, around RealityOS.
Yes.
However, if you look further down, there is a platform definition where RealityOS is within a simulator, as you indicated. Further down, there is a platform, Mako file based platform, which does not include RealityOS. It has an iOS simulator call out, but not RealityOS. So it's like they're starting to put pieces in place, but they're not all there yet.
Right.
Because even in the simulator section, further down in the code, you have simulator, watch simulator, and TV simulator.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Right, so it's not there, even though it's implied it should be there further up in the code.
Now,
so
then there's also been rumors of a home OS for a while. In fact, I think there was a job spec for somebody to work on a home OS or a home platform. Whether that would be,
what about Bridge OS?
Well, whether it would be to replace the TV stuff or the HomePod stuff, mm-hmm. or to merge those things, were they to build some kind of video conferencing type device. Yeah, exactly.
Aspect. Yeah.
Interestingly, on that topic, we had a Google Nest Hub with a screen that was sitting in our kitchen, and that was quite good for doing things like recipes and so on. It was also useful to sort of occasionally. It wasn't the top end one with the camera and the bigger screen. It was, and the price differential was quite significant actually between the regular one with the screen and the bigger one with the screen and the video conferencing capabilities or Google Meet. It's I think it's something like 3 times price difference at the moment. Anyway, we had a power outage, and that device just never came back from the dead. It just kept giving us a gray screen of doom. I tried every reset option, and it was Google, so I Googled how to reset this thing and tried multiple times. In the end, I ended up on a chat session with one of their service people, and they've talked me through sending it back for a return, which I've just done today, and getting a replacement. Yeah, it's interesting that these things are becoming more prominent around my home, at least, if not everybody's, but certainly not everybody's, I know, but I realize I live in a bubble. But I think the diversification of these devices and these operating systems is interesting. It's, if you think of that Google one, they moved from Chrome OS, I think, or Android to Fuchsia for the Home Hub. So the things just keep moving around and merging and shifting.
The thing I wanted to react, Andy, to your comment about Niantic and the Pokemon Go stops, really struck me around, it's always been around data ingestion, and getting quite a bit of data out of the game that you can get from proximity, GPS, all kinds of other stuff. But what it reminded me of was Waze. Right?
Yes,
if you remember the road munching concept.
Crowdsourcing,
Right? Crowdsourcing, getting the detail. So you can imagine that the Pokestop would allow you to get that very nice mesh, as Michael, you were saying, of a particular area. And because you are out wandering about at a walking pace, mostly for Pokemon Go, it wouldn't be that far a stretch to be able to then ingest other data around buildings or current road construction or other things from a pedestrian vantage that would be exceptionally valuable to keep an edge for Google Maps. So that was what you were describing. It's like, just like road munching with Waze, you know?
Right.
Well, and you called out a story we're about to hit, but when I think through that description, is the crowdsourcing aspect is not necessarily just about the specific data, right? But the combination of data and the other insights you can get out of it from the relationship between all the different data. And that's what it gets to be really interesting from my perspective. I was looking at a tool that I use, and they had sent it's a networking tool. They sent an email about an update to their desktop app and how you can integrate it in with the mobile app to get even more insights about your network security posture, etc. And I started looking at their terms of service in more detail. And the type of... They had a cookie banner, right? And so I went via there to the cookie details, and the type of data that they're pulling around advertising is really interesting, because one of the great features of this is it identifies when things come by and sniff your network.
Right.
Well, that gives them insights into the top brands of various mobile devices in your area. That they can then use to sell from an advertising perspective. I'm looking at it from a security perspective, and I want to know if somebody's coming by and trying to connect to my network, right? Because I've got pretty good encryption, I've got a strong password, et cetera, various things set up on it, and I don't want people joining my network. But this allows for additional insights that you don't think about from a network security device that they're using to sell data and insights about device patterns in the area.
So you'd say you have pretty good privacy then, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I actually do use PGP.
It'd be intriguing to understand, you know, what you can glean from that, because the devices that you're using, you know, certainly do beacons. We've talked about that before, about price differentials based upon what you're using and keying off of that. But just doing that by someone driving by, what was the terminology for that? War driving something? Was that? Yeah, that was it. So going to the next article, like you were just referencing, Michael, they kind of hit. There is a patent that's recently come out around the notion of visualizing non-visual stuff. So could you detect as you're driving around the presence of some things and make that visual? The your example, Michael, could be someone were driving around and going, oh, look, there's a whole bunch of Android devices in that corner of the apartment building. And over here, I see the prevalence of tablets. The article talks about looking at things like audible fences, gases and presence of those sort of things, and making the invisible visible, which is intriguing on a number of levels, but it also gets me to a so what circumstance, because if you have the necessary IoT type sensors around and they're detecting something that shouldn't be there or something that should be there and is now missing, just making that visible, is that the killer app, right? Is that the thing that's going to really pull AR through into the future and into everyone's eyeballs? I don't know.
So that's the Apple headset patent, right? So, you know, there's mm-hmm. some discussion there in that piece about, you know, what potentially, you know, Apple patent stuff all the time, as most many tech companies do. So whether or not this stuff actually ends up being part of whatever they release as a product is going to be another question. But it fits, it slots somewhat interestingly into the next story.
Yeah, I thought that's where you were going. That was the article I was pointing towards. The
The one about the potholes.
Digital twin.
Yeah, which is another way of doing it too, right? So this IV, I guess, to have a digital twin of a road and know where the potholes are, see it, visualize it, be able to interact or deal with it. That's cool too, right? And then that's a continuation of that same theme. But again, killer app or not, right? It's a... could I know that on this block of, you know, Maple and the intersection of Maple and Main, there's a pothole there. It needs to be repaired. And that is now part of my work order that goes through my work order system for road repair.
Well, what's interesting to me here, and I was trying to find the article and I can't find it, but I do remember years ago, and I believe it was in New York City, that the city was using tire sensor data off of vehicles to identify potholes.
Oh.
That they, because wow. all the cars, that's I mean, cool. let's face it.
Yeah.
They've
got the sensors.
Cars are already instrumented, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just, you know, data acquisition, again, back to your earlier point. And the idea is you don't need to do anything special. All you have to do is buy the data from the manufacturers who are getting this data in their telematics systems or in their warranty systems for modern vehicles,
right.
Which all have, you know, I can't remember the exact amount, but it's terabytes of data per hour or per minute at drive time. I mean, it's just the amount of data that can be collected and is thrown away, right, mm-hmm. is staggering. But the amount of data that you could potentially resell, say, to a city to improve road construction and targeted road repairs is just phenomenal. And that drives all kinds of insights. One, road repairs, that's an obvious one. But also you can see patterns in traffic, because modern vehicles check the temperature both inside the vehicle and outside of the vehicle. You can predict potentially road wear because of ice, which causes expansion of road and possibly breaks up the asphalt. There's lots of data that comes out and that can be resold. Check your terms of service mm-hmm. and your mm-hmm. privacy policy that can drive significant insights to much more and much beyond what you think the use is actually for, right? To kind of circle back to the initial discussion that we had.
I like it. And that also then opens up the ability of using the windshield as the user interface too, right? So if you're getting that crowdsourced notion about where there's potholes coming up in near or real time, you could alert, you know, your driver friends around you of that.
I remember probably 7 or 8 years ago at CES showing a demo to that very effect.
I was going right there, and that was what I remember too, Michael. So that for me, you know, now we're getting a little closer to, boy, wouldn't you want that? Wouldn't you want to know that there's black ice around that corner? Watch out for it, and don't make it black ice. Make it, you know, glowing red ice so that you know, right?
The ice is hot.
The ice is hot.
Well, then you could have a famous basketball player advertise it for Icy Hot.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be great. People would like that. So better than a digital twin, it's information delivered in a way that is useful for the time that you need it. And a windshield to me is a great example of lots of real estate for a meaningful HUD, as opposed to the ones that we talked about a couple weeks ago for the guy doing the gameplay and the run through with Mario. Or I had to go find this one recently, Michael. You'll remember this too. The HUD of what happens when AR advertising gets out of control.
Yep, yep, I remember that one.
All right, so let's diverge only briefly from Apple, because, you know, we're not an Apple podcast, but you know, here we go, to talk a little bit about Spotify and then draw the connection right back to Apple Music and the like. So we have a link here from The Verge about, for those of you, not me, who have been on Spotify for a while and are like, hey, I want to move over to Tidal or go somewhere else. The intriguing thing about this to me is, if you're on a streaming service and you've got a lot of songs and music that you love and you decide to switch, oh my gosh, that's going to be a problem. But how do you do it and keep your playlists and all the things handy and structured? And this article hits you on that point.
Yeah. What's really interesting about this, you know, this article is perfectly timed with all the controversy with Spotify.
Yep.
In the last few weeks, is pretty much all the music services have, I'd say, 95% the same catalog.
Yeah.
Right? When it comes to music, right? So it's, where did you start? Where did you build up your playlists that you like to listen to? And I actually downloaded the app to check it out. And the thing that I worry about, sorry to be a worrywart on this, I don't know why they ask for a subscription.
Because it's a migration activity, right? You do it once.
Done. Yeah, but you only need to migrate once.
Yeah.
Right? If you're switching platforms, you don't need to do it once. Now, if you use lots of different ones, and I guess this is their target user, is somebody who has friends in all kinds of different services and spends their money to subscribe to all of these services, then there's a lifetime premium service for $250 that will keep it in sync across all the services that you use.
I mean, I would point out that you've only, based on what you just said, that you're looking at the first one. There's like seven different services of the same kind here.
Now, I didn't look at the other ones. You're right. Now, I looked at the first one and I went down the rat hole and started playing with it.
It's a good rat hole because all of them have some cost element to them, right? So there's a couple of things to note there. Probably several. Basically, we're subscribing to all of these services or to one or more of these services, which is what, as Michael said, you know, companies want you to subscribe.
Sure.
It's a reliable source of income. And of course, in order to access more data from those services, typically you have to be a subscriber anyway in order to, get more through the API. It's only the service itself potentially is only going to limit you to getting a certain amount for free. Without having a paid service. In order to go between them, again, it's demonstration that all of these things are essentially walled gardens of different kinds. Mm-hmm. You've just said, 95% of what you want, but not everything potentially. It's a shame, having come from way back, much more of a free and open environment on the web, that there isn't more freedom of interchange of these kind of things. But of course, the people that have built these apps have had to go to the effort of figuring out how to do the UI, how to make it work smoothly between services, how to do the matching and identify things. So I'm not completely surprised that all of these
have... I don't have any problem paying for a well-written service.
Right. No. Okay. Right. So there's that. And also, the variety of things that they do support is fantastic. I mean, a lot of these I've never heard of. You've got the sort of four or five big well-known services, but some other ones as well. As you say, the ongoing, annual type or one-off types are if you want to be able to, sync on an ongoing basis. And I'm sure that those services are going to try and pivot in order to demonstrate additional value on top of whatever services they're sitting on top of, because essentially they're aggregators.
What blows me away, and maybe I'm just the grumpy old man, right? I like to own my own music, so I've ripped my own digital library. It's fairly extensive, and it has music that I like. Matter of fact,
where does it live in? Does it live in Apple Music?
It lives in a directory structure on my hard drive, and I access it for my own enjoyment via Apple Music.
Interesting. Okay.
Because I imported it into my Apple Music player.
iTunes. Now, at the time,
Excuse me?
iTunes at the time. The reason I'm asking is because I can
take those files and share them to others because they're MP3.
Right. I mean, I never completed that process of ripping all of mine, and I keep meaning to. And now I'm looking at it and thinking, actually, Apple Music is not the same as iTunes anymore, and it's a lot less obvious to me now how you rip things into a structure that makes sense. And then if I'm not going to use Apple Music as the back end for it, then should I use Plex or should I use something else as the library service? And how do I go about that whole process of converting, which is confusing.
But my grumpy old man point I was going to is the whole idea, you know, the couple of examples where I've heard people talk about this, they're all about sharing your playlist with your friends because they're on a different platform. All right, I use Spotify and you use iTunes and Michael uses Amazon, right? I don't care.
Michael,
I'm not going to do that.
Michael just made a bodily shape that implied that he does not use Amazon.
I do not use Amazon Music, but I understand, Michael, where you're coming from, right? You have your music.
And I chose that on purpose to have the discussion,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, and that's what you do, and that is an appropriate thing. Actually, I will drop in the show notes too for listening and viewing audience pleasure, a resurgence on cassette tapes. Article I heard on NPR earlier this week,
which is horrible.
I know the fidelity on a cassette tape is just terrible, but
it's awful. I bought some cassette tapes early on in my music collection career.
Yeah,
and they go bad so much easier than what I realized I should do, which was back then, is I bought the LP and I recorded it on a cassette tape. Then I played the cassette tape till it went bad and re-recorded it.
Right. Yeah, but you know, it's kind of an interesting faux nostalgia sort of thing, you know, because you've got current movies featuring people walking around with mixtapes, which you and I both did when we had that limitation. Moving along, which is an interesting non-limitation thing. Apple, back to the story again, has made an acquisition of a company called the Infinite Music Engine that creates AI soundtracks that are individually crafted and adapted. And I saw this and I was like, wow, this is really, really intriguing if it gets sophisticated enough that it recognizes what it is that I like. You know, and then tailors and tunes and creates new music for me and allows me to share it. So that's where my brain was going with this, but I still feel like we're way far off from that.
Yeah, this was interesting, and it was a pretty short article that you shared, and the key that they called out was adapt it to your heartbeat, which, you know, with Apple Fitness, I could see that, but... Is there a possibility to drive not a virtuous circle, but a feedback loop that causes problems because the heartbeat is speeding up because you're exercising, and so the music is speeding up the heartbeat, and ultimately it causes a health issue? You fall over from exhaustion. Wasn't there a famous story about the red shoes?
Ah, the red shoes. Yes. Dance the night away with those puppies,
yep.
Right? Interesting. interesting perspective.
Well, I think the other piece of this story is just in general around Apple and Apple Music, because they've purchased Primephonic, and that was recently in the news as well, because the Android version of Apple Music leaked the fact that there's going to be a separate Apple Classical app, I think, or it's going to be called Apple Classical. And also, whilst this thing does adapt to your heartbeat, I mean, there's other stuff that it could do in terms of adapting and you know, applying AI and so on.
So stepping away in our shoes for something a little bit different, but something exciting as well, Nintendo is opening up new Wii Sports now for the Switch, which I know my family's going to love. And Andy, I think you're going to be excited about seeing this too.
I loved Wii Sports. I mean, it was really the game that gave Wii its
bowling, reason. And tennis,
absolutely.
And all that.
It was so much fun. And obviously when they introduced the Joy-Cons with all of the motion detection that was possible there, which is greater, of course, than you could do back in Wii Sports days with the Wiimotes. I think it's really exciting to see what they're going to do there. I am excited about that game. They've added a couple of new ones. They are taking a progressive approach to rolling it out as well. So I think the golf game comes later than the main sort of four or five games that are going to be in there. I know this is the story we were going to talk about, but also the whole Nintendo Direct, I thought they really talked a lot about a bunch of stuff that's coming this year and coming to Switch. Some of it old. Ian, I know, is very excited about No Man's Sky coming to Switch. Mm-hmm. I say old, I mean recent, but you know, already been out on other platforms for a while. Some of it's old back catalogue Nintendo, so that I'm excited because they're adding all of the old Mario Kart tracks to the Mario Kart 8 on the Switch. So I think over 2 years, I think over 2022, 2023, in seasons, they're going to be releasing packs of tracks at a time, which they're doing as part of the extended Game Pass or whatever they call it. I can't remember now. But I love Mario Kart. It's a great game. It's really just one of the best games. And
that was
so much
fun. That was the first one I got for Switch too. Well, I know we're out of time, and luckily I can tell because I keep looking at my phone because my watch is dead. So I can see what time it is. People know why. So I think we're going to close ourselves off here. We've got a couple other elements we're going to put into the show notes, you know, paper-based memes and stuff like that that are kind of fun. Check it out. Have some fun. Drop us a line. Tell us what you're seeing with Apple or otherwise around AR, VR, reality or non-reality or mixed reality. We'd like to hear about it. We'd like to talk about it.
And where would they drop us a line at?
Gosh, you know, there's so many different places, Michael. I would suggest that they use our Twitter feed because that's how we find many of these stories and from many places. And that's games@work_biz. Until then, we'll see you next time, everybody. And thanks for listening.
Don't get eaten by a frog.
See ya.
See ya.
Oh, you buy a frog, yes.
Buy a frog. Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.